fear, gum, candy. That night, I started having the dream. I was playing outside with Jeffrey, and we were throwing something back and forth, sometimes a tennis ball, sometimes a snowball. Every time the ball touched Jeffrey, a piece of him would instantly turn black. He was still smiling and saying, play with me, every time I tried to stop. So I'd throw again and bam, again, bam, again, bam. Then he'd slowly start sinking into the ground, still with that smile on his face, as my parents appeared behind him. And he'd start saying over and over again, you're their only boy. You're their only son. You're the only boy now. And I'd wake up screaming at the top of my lungs. I had the dream, with slight variations, maybe every other night for the next 2 months. Thankfully, Jeffrey somehow always slept through it. My parents didn't, though. They eventually got so used to it happening that they started getting to my bed and grabbing me before I even woke myself up. Every time this happened, they would ask me what the dream was about, and every time I'd lie and say I didn't remember. My parents started pressuring me to tell Mrs. Galley about the dream, which I just didn't want to do. I thought, why would I need to tell her? What's she going to do? Send me to a psychiatrist? I'm not crazy. I'm having dreams that my extremely ill brother is dying, which makes sense. I hated the dreams with a burning passion, but the fact that I was having them didn't seem like a big blockbuster of a surprise to me. So, for the time being, my parents' worries about their younger son's physical health were compounded by their worries about their older son's mental health. My dad paced back and forth a lot when he was home. My mom asked me 1,000 times a day how I was doing, and I basically just pretended it was totally normal to wake up drenched with sweat, shrieking like a wounded banshee night after night. In the meantime, my mom was also asking for advice about this from all of the doctors, nurses, social workers, and assorted therapy-type people in the Philly hospital. And every single one of them told her to get me into counseling as soon as she could. Some helpful soul down there also told her that experiencing Jeffrey's treatment firsthand by visiting the hospital might alleviate my anxiety. So she started bugging me to come down to Philly on one of the weekly trips, but every time she asked, I had an excuse handy. Jazz band rehearsal, schoolwork, drum lesson, anything to keep me away from the mental health providers. Sure. I was plagued by nightmares. Absolutely, I was tormented by repeated bouts of what's the point syndrome, and there was no question that I was terrified by everything about Jeffrey's treatment. But I was coping, right? I was getting good grades in the third marking period, I was still improving rapidly on drums, I continued to be oddly popular at school, I had even patched things up with Renee Albert. One day on the bus, she caught me looking at her and stared back. Thinking fast, I made her an irresistible offer. Gum? You're offering me gum? Really? Yeah, really. Aren't you afraid I'll try to contaminate it? Well, it's only going into your own mouth, so feel free. I noticed that there were about 12 people watching the scene, like it was a jury trial or something, so I scooted across the aisle to sit by Renee and continue the peace talks in whatever privacy you can have on a packed school bus chugging along a main thoroughfare. Come on, Renee. Are you really going to be mad at me because I protected my baby brother by sending you home? Well, I failed the math final, if it's any consolation. You did? I'm sorry, did your parents flip? Kinda. Don't worry about it. It was my own fault I tuned out of that class for 2 months. No, Steven, you had a lot on your mind. I'm sorry I got mad at you. And I'm sorry about the things I said. Well, you were right. I did have a crush on you in third grade. Do you have a crush on me now? She gave me the killer Renee Albert smile and took the piece of gum from my instantly sweaty palm. Just then, the bus pulled up to our stop. I reached back and across the aisle to get my backpack, and Annette held it out to me, glaring like I had been chatting with Renee about Annette's mother or something. I didn't have time to figure that one out. We weren't blessed with the most patient bus driver on the planet. I charged up to the front and out the door. The driver was already slamming down on the gas pedal while I was in midair, so I didn't turn around in time to catch Annette's eye through the window. I wondered whether she'd still be mad the next day and why I never seemed to be able to be friends with more than one human female at a time.